All right, so today we are going on a deep dive, and we're climbing high places today.
Ooh, sounds exciting.
It is. It is. High places in ancient Israel. When we hear high places, maybe we think like pagan worship.
Yeah, that's what comes to mind first, right?
Yeah, like something shady, something bad is happening.
Right.
But the reality is, well, it's more complicated, isn't
It always is, right?
it?
Yeah, it is a lot more nuanced. And to help us unpack all this, we are going to be using excerpts from a lecture series by Dr. Robert Van Noy on the Books of Kings.
Excellent. Okay, so let's start with the basics. What was a high place?
So basically, a high place was an elevated area that was used for worship. It could be like a hilltop or, a plateau, something like that.
Okay. So the Israelites were using high places even before the temple was built.
Right, yeah, long before. But they weren't allowed to just take over any old high place they found. Like the
Right.
Canaanite ones, those were off limits.
Right. They had to destroy those. Yeah. I remember those verses in Numbers and Deuteronomy.
Yeah, no conversions allowed. They had to be destroyed.
So not just any high place was okay. How did they decide where to build a legitimate altar then?
Well, according to Dr. Van Noy, they were only supposed to build altars in places that had been, divinely sanctioned.
Okay.
So,
Yeah.
like a
At least they're
theophany,
coughing you.
a dream, some miraculous event, something, some clear sign that God had picked that place as special,
So you couldn't just pick a random hill and be like, hey, God, this spot looks nice.
Exactly.
It had to have that God was here energy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it had to have that sign.
Yeah.
And, this brings up like a really interesting question about how worship practices changed over time.
Okay.
So did this rule about the, divinely sanctioned sites, did that change after the temple in Jerusalem was built?
That's a good question because, I mean, I'm thinking about Deuteronomy 12. That seems pretty clear that there should only be one central place of worship. But then I'm also thinking, like, if you're a Levite living up north and you've got to go to Jerusalem every time you want to do, anything religious,
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a pilgrimage could take weeks.
It could. It
It
could.
just doesn't seem very practical.
No, not at all. And that's actually at the heart of a big debate amongst scholars.
Okay.
So some say Deuteronomy 12 is very strict, only
Only
Jerusalem.
Jerusalem. Only Jerusalem.
Others say, well, maybe it's more about like the temple being the main place,
Okay.
but not necessarily the only place.
Okay, so like Jerusalem is headquarters,
Yes.
but we can have some branch offices,
Exactly, like a franchise situation.
Right.
And I think this gets to like the reason high places ended up being such a, loaded term,
Yeah.
often with like negative
Yeah.
connotations, even though the reality on the ground was probably much more complicated.
Yeah, like over time, high places just became this like blanket term for bad worship.
Right.
Even though initially there were totally legit high places that God was cool with.
Exactly. It's a
Yeah.
really good point. And this is where I think King Asa's story gets so interesting.
Right, because he's this good king, reformer. But the Bible seems to contradict itself when it comes to Asa and high
He
places.
does. It
Like
does.
in 1 Kings, it says he didn't remove the high places. But then 2 Chronicles is like, no, he did remove all these altars and high places. And then to make it even more confusing, it's like, but his heart was still fully committed to God, even though he didn't remove all the high places. What's going on here?
Well, I think we need to remember that there's a difference between high places dedicated to Yahweh
Okay.
and those dedicated to pagan gods,
Right.
So Asa was probably, getting rid of the pagan ones,
Okay.
but allowing the worship of Yahweh to continue at other high places. And maybe that's why his heart was still considered, true to God.
It's like, hey, at least he's getting rid of the really bad ones,
Right. He's doing his best.
Yeah. And this reminds me of something in 2 Chronicles where it talks about people sacrificing at high places, but only to the Lord their God.
Right. Yeah, so it seems like things really evolved over time.
Yeah.
You have this mix of official religion and what people were actually doing.
Yeah, I mean, think about all the people living far from Jerusalem, right?
Right.
Do you think they all thought those unofficial high places were okay? Or were they just trying to connect with God,
It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It does. Like, what were they really thinking?
Yeah.
It also makes you think about the pressure these kings were under
Oh, yeah.
to keep their people unified religiously, especially with rival kingdoms popping up.
For sure. And that brings us to Asa and his big political blunder, right?
Oh, yeah, when he turned to a pagan king for help.
Exactly.
So he's facing a threat from the northern kingdom, And instead of, you know, trusting in God, he goes and makes this deal with Ben-Hadad, the Aramean king.
Right. And not just any deal, right? Mm-hmm. He used temple treasures.
Yeah. To bribe him? I mean, talk about a risky move.
It really was. And we don't hear much about the fallout in Kings, but 2 Chronicles gives us the juicy details. He was called out by the prophet Hanani for that.
Oh, yeah. For relying on a foreign king instead of God.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, even a good king like Asa wasn't immune to making bad decisions.
Especially when his kingdom was on the line, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's interesting because geographically, Ben-Hadad's kingdom was northeast of Israel, so he could attack them from behind.
Ah, okay. So Asa was playing a dangerous game.
He was, using foreign alliances to protect his own kingdom.
And this was just the start of a long struggle between Syria and both kingdoms.
It was.
So even the most devout leaders can get caught up in the political games of their time.
For sure.
And sometimes, you know, those political decisions have a huge impact on religious practices. Yeah.
Speaking of which, I think it's time we talked about Jeroboam and the golden calves.
Oh, yes. When politics and religion really collide.
Yeah, this is going to be good.
This is where things get interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jeroboam. First king of the northern kingdom. He's got this problem, right?
Yeah, he does.
If his people keep going down to Jerusalem to worship,
right,
they might switch their loyalty back to the south.
Yeah.
So what's he going to do?
Well, he thought the solution was pretty simple, you know, create some other places to worship.
Right.
So he sets up these golden calves at Bethel and Dan.
Bethel and Dan, okay.
Yeah, prominent sites in the north. And he tells his people, no need to go all the way to Jerusalem. These are your gods, the ones who brought you out of Egypt.
Wait a minute. Isn't that the exact same thing the Israelites said when they made the golden calf in the wilderness?
You got it. With Aaron in Exodus.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It's that parallel is really important.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder what Jeroboam was really up to. You know, mm-hmm. Was he trying to like recreate that moment? You know, maybe tap into this desire for a more visible image of God.
It's almost like he's hijacking that whole Exodus story for his own political gain.
I think you're right. And it really gets to like the heart of why what he did was so bad.
Okay.
Because remember, idolatry for the Israelites, it wasn't just about worshiping statues.
Right.
It was anything that replaced Yahweh as the one true God.
So it's not about what you're physically bowing down to,
yeah,
but like what you're putting your faith in.
Exactly. And with these golden calves and tying them to the Exodus,
yeah,
he's creating a false narrative of like national liberation.
Okay.
He's saying, we don't need Yahweh. We don't need Jerusalem. We got our own gods right here.
Wow. That is a bold move. Bold and tragic move.
It is. It really is.
Yeah, because those golden calves, they become like a symbol of division and idolatry and
you know,
the north departing from true worship.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just the golden calves themselves. Dr. Vanoy points out that Jeroboam, he also messed with the priesthood.
Okay.
Like big time. He basically said anyone could be a priest.
Oh, wow.
If they supported him.
So he's like totally ignoring the Levites.
Yeah. The guys who were like supposed to be the guardians of religious tradition.
Yeah, yeah.
It was all about power, you know?
Right.
Making sure religion was under his control.
You know, this makes me think about something you said earlier.
Yeah.
About how do we know when religious practices are being, you know, manipulated?
Yeah.
For political reasons.
That's such a good question. And I think it's still so relevant for us today, too, you know?
Yeah.
One of the biggest red flags I see is when religious leaders too cozy with a specific political party.
Right, right. Like when they use religious language to justify policies that seem to go against like the core values of their faith.
It gets messy, doesn't it?
It does, it does.
It's so important to be careful, you know?
Yeah.
To think critically about why things are being said and done.
Yeah.
Are they really about faith? About serving God?
Yeah.
Or is it something else?
Yeah, some other agenda. It's hard to know sometimes, you know?
It is.
But I think these stories we're looking at, they give us some good insights.
They do.
You know, about how power and politics
can
really mess with religious practices.
For sure. It happens over and over again.
Yeah.
Throughout history.
Yeah.
Even today, you know?
It's like faith gets twisted to serve political ends.
Exactly. We can't just blindly accept everything we're told, even if it comes from, you know, religiously.
We got to think for ourselves.
We do. We have to look at the evidence, ask the tough questions.
Yeah. All right. Well,
let's move on.
Let's move on to the next chapter here. Because the story of the golden calves.
It doesn't end with Jeroboam.
It doesn't end there. Oh, no.
No, it gets passed down.
Oh, boy.
To his successors.
Uh-oh. This is going to be good.
It is. It gets messy.
It makes you think about, you know, the everyday Israelites living through all this, you know, like all these changes, these power struggles. What was it like for them?
Yeah, that's a great point. It takes us from like the big picture of kings and prophets.
Right.
And down to the, you know,
the average Joe.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The everyday person's experience.
Right.
So imagine, you know, you're an Israelite living in the north. During, you know, Jeroboam's reign.
Okay.
You've grown up hearing all these stories about the Exodus.
Right. About Yahweh.
Right. About the one true God who rescued them from, you know, slavery in Egypt.
Yeah.
And now suddenly you've got these golden calves.
Yeah.
These man-made objects.
Yeah.
And you're being told, like, these are the gods who brought you out of Egypt.
Whoa, that's got to be confusing.
Right. It's like, what do you believe?
Yeah, like, who do you trust?
Exactly. Who has the authority to say what's true? You know?
Yeah, and how you should worship God.
Yeah. And it just shows you the challenges of, like, keeping your faith strong when everything around you is so chaotic.
Right, yeah. And honestly, I feel like that's something we still struggle with today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about all the messages we're bombarded with now.
Constantly.
Right. About what's right, what's wrong, what to believe, how to live.
Yeah, it's hard to, like, sift through all the noise.
It is. And that's why it's so important to, you know, think critically.
Yeah.
Question what we're told, even if it's coming from, you know, people we're supposed to respect.
Right. Like, even authority figures.
Yeah, exactly. So, looking back at all this, what do you think we can learn from the Israelites?
Well, I think, for me, it's a reminder of how powerful religious symbols and stories are.
Oh, for sure.
Like, think about the golden calves or the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
Those things carried so much weight for them.
They did. They shaped how people understood God, their whole relationship with the divine.
Yeah, it's like they become like shorthand for a whole set of beliefs and values.
You got it. And that's why it's so important to be aware of, like, how powerful they can be.
Right.
They can be a source of unity, you know?
Yeah.
Bringing people together around shared beliefs. But, like we've seen, they can also be used for bad stuff.
Like manipulating people.
Right. Using them to justify things that, you know, aren't really in line with their faith.
Yeah, like using a symbol of God to gain political power.
Exactly. And this brings us to, I think, another key lesson from all this.
Okay.
The whole, like, messy relationship between faith and politics.
Yeah. That's something we still deal with today.
Oh, big time.
We've seen how political choices affect religious practices.
Yeah.
And the other way around.
It goes both ways. It's this constant tension.
Yeah. You know, yes, sometimes we want to think of faith as like this personal thing, you know, separate from the world.
Yeah. Tucked away safe.
Right. But these stories show us that's just not reality.
It's not. It's always being influenced by everything around us.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I have one more question for you. So with all this complexity, how do we make sure our faith isn't being, you know, used for someone else's political goals?
That's the million-dollar question, right? It's something we all have to grapple with. And I think for me, it starts with awareness, you know?
Yeah.
You got to be aware that manipulation is possible.
Right.
We need to think critically about the information we're getting.
Yeah.
You know, question the motives behind the messages.
Yeah.
And we have to be willing to speak up when we see injustice.
Even when it's hard.
Even when it's hard. It's about being informed, being engaged.
And being brave, right, to stand up for what we believe in.
You got it. And I think, you know, that's a perfect note to end on.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on this journey through ancient Israel.
Yeah, we went to some high places today.
We did. We hope you learned something new and that you'll keep exploring these stories.
And keep asking those tough questions.
Exactly.
And keep diving deep.
Always.